We begin Masechta Avodah Zarah. This Masechta, the Meiri, often at the beginning of every Masechta, he summarizes the major topics of it. So here, even though it's called Avodah Zarah, really the focus of it is going to be on things that are also as outgrowths of the Isser of Avodah Zarah, the actual Isser to worship Avodah Zarah itself, and the penalties for it we learned about in Sanhedrin. A person gets skila, certain things a person might do, such as hugging or kissing the idol or whatever, if that's not the normal way of worshiping it, are going to be allowed for his Chayav Malkus. So Tosfos, in fact, the first Tosfos on the Masechta points out that's why our Masechta is kind of a sequel to that, having talked over there about the basic concept of the Isser of Avodah Zarah. So now our Masechta is going to go into things that are also as outgrowths of that Isser. So it's going to talk about the Goyim in those days, of course, mostly worshipped Avodah Zarah. So it starts with the Dinim about what you're also to do business with them, because of issues of Avodah Zarah and related issues, where sometimes certain things you're not allowed to do business with them, certain things, certain times, because of Avodah Zarah matters, as we'll talk about in a moment. Some things you're never allowed to sell them to do business with them or whatever for the same reason. Then you have things that were used for Avodah Zarah, or things that have Avodah Zarah symbols on them, what you're allowed and not allowed to do with them. You have actual statues and images themselves of things like that. And then you have the last quarter of the Masechta, the last third to quarter of the Masechta approximately deals with Yayin Nesach. Before that, it also deals with the other things of Goyim that are also such as Pasakum and Cholavakum and whatever. So that's going to be the topics of our Masechta. So you look at, for example, the Rambam and the Rambam's Hilchos Avodah Zarah includes 51 mitzvahs. It's the most mitzvahs in any one section of the Rambam. You have there's 51 mitzvahs, and a substantial number of them are things that are going to be dealt with in our Masechta in terms of what you're allowed and not allowed to do with statues that belong to Goyim and doing business with them and all these kinds of things that we're talking about over here. So the Mishnah starts off. Three days before the Chagos of Goyim. A Dehen means their holidays. We'll see in the Gemara where that term comes from. So for 3 days before that, also loses veloses imahen. You're not allowed to loses veloses here, and we Ashkenazim pronounce them identical, but it literally loses means to take. The first loses with a sin means to take, and the second one with a sof means to give. So it means to do business with them, basically. So you're not allowed to do business with them. Now there's a lot of discussion among the Rishonim, what exactly is the scope of this Isser, and how does it apply nowadays? Where, for example, we have nobody avoids doing business with Goyim, let's say on Xmas or on Easter or other holidays of theirs. So there's a considerable discussion about it. Rashi starts saying, the idea is, all the dinim that we're going to have in our Mishnah, is we're concerned that the goy may go and thank his Avodah Zarah for the good business deal or whatever it is that he has, that he did. So that would mean, in other words, so based on that, it would be also to buy or to sell to them, because the idea would be both buying and selling provides a benefit to the goy, and now that might be something where he then goes and thanks his Getschke for it. So that's one way of looking at it. The Tosfos discusses at some so. On the other hand, later in the Masechta, later in the Perek, Rashi says that primarily the Isser is to sell to them, because usually when a person sells something, he's not necessarily so happy about it. He would be upset, in fact, maybe, that he has to sell something valuable of his. So therefore, in fact, Rashi says later in the Perek that maybe according to that, loses for loses would not mean to buy or to sell. It would actually mean to buy, it would mean actually to sell to them. And then losses for losses both refers to selling, giving him the object and taking the money. So in fact, Tosfos says that seems that Rashi changed his mind from what he said over here. Here Rashi says the problem is that he may go thank his getchka, and therefore that both are also buying and selling. Whereas later in the perek, Rashi seems to be saying that only selling to them is also buying from them is mutter, at least buying certain kinds of things. So you have that. And so first of all, then the question is whether losses for losses does in fact mean to buy and sell, or does it mean to do any kind of business, or does it mean just to sell to them? In addition, Tosfos also goes on to say, Tosfos discusses at some length, how is it that nowadays we do business with Goyim on their chagas and 3 days before them? So one thing is, Tosfos points out, the whole Isser might only be things that they're going to offer to their Avodah Zarah. The Gemara later on Daf Vav starts dealing with what exactly the nature is of the Isser that we have over here. Is the problem, the Gemara says there, Mishum Arvacha, is because the Goy has now made a good profit, and therefore now he's going to go thank his getchka, or is it Lifne Iver, Lissitin Michshol, that you're causing him a stumbling block, which itself, then you have a few different ways of understanding in Mephoshim, is the stumbling block that now, the same thing, he's going to go thank his getchka, which it's also for you to cause that to happen, or does it mean a stumbling block as in now he has an object that he can go and offer as an offering to his getchka? So Tosfos discusses over here that it might be that the whole issue is only things that they can use to bring as a korban. So now Tosfos discusses at some length, and various other Rishonim and Achronim discuss different points, how is it that nowadays we do business with them? So first of all, Tosfos points out a lot of their chagas actually have to do with their saints rather than nowadays that most goyim, at least the ones in the times, at least the ones among whom the Rishonim lived, were Christians. So their chagas are Christian chagas rather than the pagan ones that our Masechta deals with. In the next Mishnah, it's going to give a list of pagan holidays, but they don't keep those anymore. So it would seem then, based on what Tosfos is saying, that perhaps these dinim might apply. Yid is living in India or doing business with Indians where they worship out and out of Avodah Zarah, that it might be different. But Tosfos says, as far as the Christians, first of all, most of their chagas are in honor of their saints, and they don't actually worship those saints per se. They venerate them, they whatever, but it's not the same thing. So in fact, a couple of Rishonim say that in fact, at most, the Isurim that we're talking about over here would apply to Easter and Kratzmach, which are holidays of theirs that have directly to do with Osa Ish, but that's it. In any case, Tosfos then goes on to discuss a few different possible reasons why it should be mutter. Tosfos discusses, first of all, it might be mutter on the grounds of Eva. It might be mutter on the grounds that it's going to cause anti-Semitism, and that itself is a concern. That itself may cause danger to Jews in the future. It's not sakonis nefashis right now, but at least there is that consideration of Eva. Reb Moshe in particular mentions in one of his Chuvas, for example, listen, it wouldn't be also daraisa anyhow. The Yid has no intention of causing the goy to go thank his getchka. So therefore, it would be a matter of davar sheni miskav. So the Chachamim said that you shouldn't do it because Avodah Zarah is a very serious, stringent issue, but Eva might be a strong reason to override that. Whether the Isurim of our Mishnah are in fact the Rabbanon is a whole question in itself, because if it's a matter of Lifnei Iver, then after all that is an Isur D'oraisa, and for that matter the Gemara later on brings a point. In this connection that if it caused the Goy to go thank his Avodah Zarah would be an Isur that Rashi mentions later in the Perek of Lo Yishama Al Picha. The Torah says it shouldn't be that Avodah Zarah's name is mentioned because of you. That would be an Isur D'oraisa. So in that case, then, maybe not necessarily would the dinim of our mission be D'rabbanon. It might actually be D'oraisa. But the Gemara actually brings up that question later on and leaves it open. And therefore, since it's a suffix, then Eva might be a consideration. So Tosfos again says that Eva might be a consideration because it'll cause anti-Semitism. But Tosfos says that's really not a full answer either, because there are certainly things that you could get away with and not do with them, and it wouldn't cause Eva. You know, you don't have to sell them something right now. You could always say, right now, I don't have anything to sell, and so forth. So ultimately, Tosfos gives a couple of points. One of them is because the Goyim among whom we live, they don't really worship Avodah Zarah. Various Mephoshim talk about, based on the Gemara has an expression later on, that the Goyim, especially outside Eretz Yisrael, are not really so fanatical about their Avodah Zarah, to the extent that if they do a good business deal, for example, they're going to go thank their Getchke. Then Tosfos also mentions the point that there is also the matter of kemachnif. There's the matter of that it's clear to the goy that you don't believe in his avodah zarah at all, and you're only doing it because you have no choice. Like, you're flattering him. So then there's heterim on those grounds as well. And then again, Tosfos brings up this point, appointed Abenatam, the whole Isser of our Mishnah would only be things that they use for korbanos, for their getchkes. Very well then, the Christians don't actually bring korbanos. What they do is, they give money to the churches and whatever. Okay, well, that's not money they would have anyway. That's not something you're not really giving them something that they wouldn't have had. We're going to talk about, let's say, for example, selling them an animal. Tosfos points out the problem is that an animal you sell to them, they may go and use it for a korban, and even if they have other animals, now this gives them the option of using a nicer animal for a korban, and that itself would be a problem, as opposed to when it comes to money, then that's not an issue. They're not actually bringing the money as a korban, they're giving it to their priests and whatever. So therefore that wouldn't really be considered an issur. There's a variety of other explanations that Rishonim and Achronim give for what the Heterim are that we have nowadays to do business with Goyim, even on their Chogas. So we have the Ramban points out also, listen, you know, at this point, people wouldn't be able to manage with such an Isser. We live among the Goyim. We kind of depend on them to do business with them and whatever, and we wouldn't really be able to do that. So that's another consideration as well. And then there's a variety of different points about that as well. A couple of Rishonim do say that a person wants to be machmer, tovah el bracha, would be good, and a bracha should come on him, but lamaisa, you don't really see that people are particularly careful about these things. But so there's all those considerations, and then some that factor into that. Anyway, going back to the actual Mishnah itself, so the Mishnah is saying with 3 days before their Chogas, and by the way, it would mean some Mephoshim say that we're talking only about the annual Chogas of theirs, like Xmas or New Year's or Easter or the rest of them, or the equivalent pagan ones that they had back then. There is a point on Daf Vav, the Gemara is going to mention the Noitzrim, whose holiday is on Sunday. On the face of it, Noitzrim means the Christians, although we'll talk about then what it means. And then in that case, then this din would apply to that as well. According to that, then, it would mean the din of the Mishnah would actually be that it's also to do business with them on Thursday or Friday as well, because those are 3 days before Sunday. In any case, so you're not allowed, also losses for losses imahen, so you're not allowed to do business with them, again, subject to this machlokas, whether losses for losses means to buy or sell, or whether it means strictly to sell to them, but buying from them would be mutter, because they're not going to be happy about that, because on the contrary, they'd be sad that they have to sell something valuable of theirs. You're not allowed to do that. Lash ilan velishol mehen. You're not allowed to lend them or borrow them. Or you're not allowed to lend them things or borrow from them. For the sake, so lend them because now they have the use of the thing and they're going to be thankful to their getchka. Actually, we're going to learn later on, the Gemara later on in the Perek is going to talk about why is it? Is the problem that you definitely can't borrow from them because then they're going to be thankful. Look at this, the Yid depends on me and I'm going to go thank my Getchke. And the Isser to lend to them would be just as a Gzera so that you don't come to borrow from them. Or would it be because now, or the other way around, actually, everybody agrees that lending them would be a problem because now he has something available for him to use and he's going to be thankful for it. The question is, what about borrowing from them? Is it just a gzera because of that, or is it actually a separate issur of itself because the goy will also be thankful that the yid depends on him? Anyway, continues the Mishnah, lahalvorisan v'lilvus mehen, you're also not allowed to lend them money or borrow money from them. Tosfos says you would be allowed to lend them money at Ribis, because they're not going to be happy about that. On the contrary, he'd be upset that he has to pay Ribis. There are Rishonim who disagree with that and say that it would be also with Ribis as well, because listen, the fact is he's happy that he has the money for use right now. And in addition, he may think to himself that he's going to get out of paying somehow or other. Okay, in Lashon Kodesh, by the way, you have a distinction that you don't have in English between lending and between lending objects that you're going to get back the actual object versus lending money or food. In English, you would say, I'm lending you my car or I'm lending you money. And it's the same thing, even though you expect to get back the same car, but you don't expect to get back the same money. In Lashon Kodesh, you have the word lashilon and lishol used for borrowing or lending objects where the object itself is going to be returned versus lahalvos and milvos, which refer to lending consumables, things like money or food. So, and then the Mishnah says, lepodon v'lifroya mehen, you're also not allowed to pay them back a debt or to have them pay you back a debt. So all those things, is the idea, as Rashi is saying, because then the goy is going to be thankful and go worship as Avodah Zarah, and you're causing him, then, so then you have Lo Yishama Al Picha, and you have Lifnei Iver, or again, is the Isser, because you're making available to him resources that he can use for worship of it, for worshiping Avodah Zarah. And again, what is the scope of the Isser? That was everything that we were talking about in the last couple of minutes, about what exactly the scope of the Isser is and when it applies and when it doesn't. So the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nifroin Mehen. Rabbi Yehuda says you are allowed to make them pay back a debt during those 3 days before the Chagga, and Phoenicia Meitzer Huloi, because on the contrary, the goy is going to feel bad about it that he had to pay money. So therefore he's not going to thank his Getchka for that. Omer Huloi, the Chum answered him, Achvisha Meitzer Hu Achshav. Sure, he's going to be upset right now, Sameach Hu L'Achazman, but afterwards he's going to be happy. You know what? I finally got out of my debt. I finally got rid of it. And therefore, so now there's the concern that now on his Chagga itself, he's going to go and thank his Genshke. Tosfos discusses over here that first of all, the Gemara is going to mention later on, there's a difference between whether the loan is Baal Peh or Beshtar. The Baal Peh, you're in great danger of losing the loan altogether if you don't get it paid off as soon as possible, so therefore you have reason to be able to collect it. And then Tosfos says maybe even with a Shtar, maybe there would be reason to say that it would be Mutter. And then Tosfos discusses, again, nowadays when we lend, if a Yid lends money to a Goy, it may well be aside from all the considerations that we were talking about before, why the dinim of our Mishnah may not necessarily apply in practice in most places nowadays where Jews live, but in addition, there may be other reasons as well. And it's called matzel miyadam. You're saving from them that otherwise you may not get the debt paid back at all. So the Gemara starts off. Now, we said lifnei edehen. We said this expression, edehen, meaning the chogas of the goyim. What's the proper version of the word? Rav Shmuel, Chad Toni Edehen, one of them said the proper wording in the Mishnah is Edehen with an Aleph, which is how we have it. The Chad Toni Edehen, and the other one says that it's supposed to be Edehen with an Ayin. So two different versions. And the Gemara points out, Mandatoni, we have to realize, of course, for us Ashkenazim, they sound the same. For Sardim, they would sound different. And back then, most Jews pronounced them differently, so there would, in fact, be that difference. So the Gemara points out, Mandatoni Edehen Lo Mishtamish, or Mandatoni Edehen Lo Mishtamish. Neither one is incorrect. Both of them, there is a source in a pasuk for calling their chogas by that name, with an aleph or an ayin, respectively. You notice, by the way, for example, the Muslims have they call their holidays Eid with an ayin at the beginning. You have their various couple of their chogas that begin with that word. So they have it with an ayin. So the question is, in Lashon Kodesh, is it also with an ayin or is it with an aleph? Mandatoni edehen lemishtavish. Why is it that saying of an aleph is not incorrect? Yichtiv, we find a pasuk that uses that word on that, about the goyim. The ki korev yom edom. The pasuk says the day of their edom is close. It means the day of their destruction, the day of their disaster. So therefore, we would use that as a derogatory name for their chagas. We would call it like the day of their, instead of calling it the day of their celebration, we would call it the day of their disaster. So Edom would be in the singular, and Rashi points out, Edom, first of all, anyway, Edom refers to Avodah Zarah, this is in Parshas Hazinu, and Psukim, right after that, after Kikor of Yem Edom, mentions, saying to the Ovid Avodah Zarah, here, where is now, Hashem is going to say, where's your Getchkes, or you're going to see, finally, that they're unable to help you, unlike me. Rashi mentions over there Machlokas, Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemiah, whether those psukim are referring to the goyim or lahavdol to the Jews. Anyway, the point is that the word Edom is mentioned over there in connection with Avodah Zarah, and it means the day of their disaster, of their destruction. So therefore, we're using that as a derogatory name for their chagas. They think of it as days of their celebration, and then really it's days of their disaster. So that's what the Aleph. Umandatoni Eidehen Lemishnamish, the one who says Eidehen with an ayin is also not wrong, because you have a pasuk, Yitnu Eidehen Miyitziku, let them give their testimonies and they will be shown to be right. So at this point, the Gemara assumes that pasuk is talking about the goyim. It's talking about how Hashem is going to judge the goyim, and they're going to have to bring forth their evidence, their eders, in order for them to be cleared in judgment, in Hashem's judgment. So therefore, the Gemara is assuming at this point that they're going to bring their aydehem, their getchkes, as a testimony, and then they can testify on their behalf, and you'll see from their testimony that they are in fact rishoyim and they were worshiping Avodah Zarah. So again, we see that word is used in connection with Avodah Zarah. So in our mission also, a dehen with an ayin can mean chogas in honor of Avodah Zarah. Okay, the Gemara says, Mandatoni a dehen, my time alaytoni a dehen. So the opinion that says that it should be with an aleph, why doesn't he hold that it should be with an ayin instead? Amalach, because he tells you, Tavra Od, if it's better to speak, if Zitana would rather use the expression that refers to the breaking and the destruction of the Goyim instead of their Simcha, so you're using a derogatory name. You have an English, you have the word euphemism, which means using a nicer word for something instead of for something not so nice. You have, there's a less common word in English, a dysphemism, to do the other way around, to take something and use a Davka not nice name for it. So basically, in other words, we would rather use, if we're going to use a dysphemism for the chogas of the goyim, we would rather that it be based on one that mentions their breakage and their destruction. Okay, Umandatoni Eidehen, my time alaytoni Eidehen. What about the opinion that says that it was an ayin? Why didn't he use the pasuk with the aleph? And the answer is Amalach, because he'll tell you, think of it, Man kegorim lehu tavra. Sure, in Parshas Hazinu it mentions Yom Edom, the day of their destruction. But that's only the final act in the whole thing. Man kegorim lehu tavra. What is it that causes them this breakage in the first place, that they deserve to be broken and punished? Lost in love. Eidus she idu ba'atzman, the fact that they testified against themselves, the fact that they were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and they were going to be judged and punished for that by Hashem at the end of Olam Hazeh. Hilkach, Eidus Adifa, so they worship that Avodah Zarah in Olam Hazeh, and Hashem is going to bring them to judgment on that, and that in turn is going to bring Yom Edom, the day of their breakage and their destruction. Hilkach, Eidus Adifa, so therefore that opinion says you'd rather look at the initial cause of the whole thing, which is the Avodah Zarah that they worship, where Yitnu Eidehen, the Yitziku, is referring to that at this point, the Gemara's understanding, that it means that the Avodah Zarahs are going to come and testify, or Rashi says it may actually be as a rhetorical statement, or your Avodah Zarahs going to come and testify on your behalf. So therefore, that opinion says, Hilchach Eidos Adifa, so therefore mentioning the Eidos is more important, because it's the cause of the breakage that they're going to suffer afterwards. Okay. The Gemara asks, though, you're telling me those words, Yitnu Einayim V'Yitztiku, it's a pasuk in Yeshaya, you're telling me that those words are referring to the Goyim? The fact is, you're misunderstanding the pasuk. It actually refers to the Jews. Rabbi Shimon Levi says that all the mitzvahs that Jews do in this world, they will come and testify on behalf of the Jewish people in Olam Haba. Because you have the pasuk goes like this. The whole pasuk goes like this. The Gemara is assuming a darshan, the whole pasuk. Kol ha-goyim nikbetzu yachdav, all the nations have assembled together. The osful umim, and all the peoples are going to gather. The goyim and the umim, for one thing, the Malbim explains there, and in many other pasukim, goyim means nations in general. The umim means specifically the various religions. Anyway, mi vahem yagid zois, the pasuk says, who among them is going to tell this? The yushonis yashmi unu, who of them is going to be able to tell us in advance what's going to happen? Yitnu. Let them give their testimonies, and they'll be shown to be right. And they will hear, and they will say it is true. So the Gemara now is going to focus on the second, on the last part of the pasuk that. So the Gemara explains, Rabbi Shimon Levi explains, the Jewish people, the mitzvahs that the Jewish people did are going to testify on their behalf that they were tzaddikim all the time. And when it says, they will hear, when it continues, they will hear and they will say it is true, means the goyim, they will hear this judgment, they will hear the eders, and they will testify that it's true. As the Gemara is going to say later on in the, that it's true the Jews were faithful to Torah and mitzvahs even all the time that they lived among us and we persecuted them and all that. So according to that, Yitzchak is actually referring to the Jewish people. So what are you telling me? That's referring to the goyim and to the testimony of their getchkas. This is the pretended testimony of their getchkas, and therefore use it as a name for their chogas. That's not what the pasuk means. Marsha points out in this connection, you know, like we have in Pirkei Avos, that a person does a mitzvah, he creates a malach, and he creates more strength in Pamalia Shamaila, and vice versa in Aveira, so those themselves are the edim that testify on behalf of the Jews. And now the goyim are going to be shown and made to agree that, you know what, it's true, the Jews were very faithful to mitzvahs, even though we always gave them a very terrible time over it. How are we saying that Yitnu a name the Yitzku, that Yitnu a Dehem the Yitzku would refer to the Goyim and their Geshkas? So Ella Omer of Hunabred Rishua, no. Manda Omer, a Dehem Mehocha. The one who says that the Goyish Chogas are called a Dehem is going to be based on a different pasuk. Another pasuk, also in Yeshaya, Yotzei Feso Kulam Toru, the ones who make idols, they're all nothingness. Vachmudehem and all their precious things, Bal Yeilu, they won't accomplish anything. Ve'edehem Hema, and they are their edim. Meaning here, it's clear that it means the Getchka is going to Zavod Zara that they worship is going to go testify and show that they're guilty for worshiping it. Keep in mind, you know, I mean, when they're worshiping a statue, it's not their, nobody seriously believes that it's the actual wood or stone or whatever statue that helps them. It's rather that they use it to represent some spiritual power, some malach or some planet or some intangible force or whatever that they believe is embodied in this Getchka. So now those powers and those planets and whatever actually exist. So now, Lossid Lover, then they're going to go and testify. What do you mean? You silly goyim of nation such and such. You worship me under such and such a name. How could you do that? Didn't you realize how stupid that is and how Hashem runs the world? So now it's clear from that pasuk, Ve'edehem Hema, it's their testimony. So we see that their getchkas themselves and the powers that they worship are going to testify against them. So now that justifies calling their chogas Edehem with an ayin, meaning in other words that these are things that in the future they're going to be testified against because of them, and therefore that brings their punishment later on. Okay, so now having quoted that pasuk Yitnu Hem Yitzku, now the Gemara is going to go into a long sugya Bagabta dealing with that entire pasuk with what that pasuk represents. It's a bit unusual over here to have a masechta begins with a long piece of Bagabta like that. Usually you have the first begins by dealing with the halachas and the Mishnah, but here the discussion of the halachas is going to wait for a couple more blocks, and the Gemara is going to spend several dafim over here talking matters of Agadah relating to this whole matter of the Goyim and their future future judgment, and then digressing to various other topics about the importance of Torah and other such things. So the Gemara says, Dorosh Rav Chanina bar Papa v'itemer Rav Simloi. Rav Chanina bar Papa, or some say Rav Simloi, gave the following drasha: La'osid lover in the future. So it can mean the Ravid says it means the times of Mochemes Gog and Magog, the Iyun Yaakov on Ein Yaakov says it means the time after Mashiach comes. Anyway, so in some future time, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sefer Torah or Manicha B'Chekoi, Hashem is going to bring a Sefer Torah and, so to speak, put it in his lap to be ready to judge the Goyim. Why is he holding a Sefer Torah? So Marsha explains that the Goyim now you have, there are Goyim who believe in it, there are Goyim who believe in Hashem, and there are Goyim who worship Avodah Zarah. But each nation thinks that their religion is the true one, and therefore now each one is thinking that Hashem, that they're going to be judged, and they're going to be found that they were right all along in what they were doing. So now Hashem holds with him a Sefer Torah, and is saying to them, no, only what's in the Sefer Torah is true, and what I commanded to the world, but not any of the other books that you claim are the basis of your religion. Then you have the Rashba makes a different point similarly, that the Goyim think the most important thing is their various philosophies and things like that, and Hashem is going to show them that the only important thing in the world, the only thing that Hashem actually gave, the only thing by which a person should live his life is Torah. So even the Goyim have their Sheva Mitzvahs, so they should have been keeping that, and they should be keeping that because the Torah says to keep them, not because they're logical. But in any case, the point is that all of your philosophies and things like that have nothing to do with it. And in token of that, Hashem is holding a Sefer Torah and saying he's going to judge the Goyim based on that. So Hashem is putting a Sefer Torah in his lap. And he announces, anybody who was involved with the Torah, come and receive their reward. So the Goyim all come in a mass, in a confused mass. Doesn't mean the actual Goyim themselves, doesn't mean they're Malachim, whatever the case, the point is they all come as a group. As the Pasuk begins, Kol HaGoyim Nikbetzu Yachkav HaGoyim, as the Pasuk says, all the nations gather together. So Nikbetzu. So first it says Nikbetzu Yachdav, then it says V'yei Osu. So therefore that leads the Gemara to say that the Marsha says, because Nikbetzu, you should have said Nikbetzu, and it says Yachdav, but then it says V'yei Osu. Without Yachdav, therefore the Gemara is understanding that it means that first they're going to come in a confused mass, and then they're going to have to come as individual groups. So Amar Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tikonsu L'fanei V'Yibuvya, don't come to me in a confused mass. Ela Tikonis Kol Omer V'Omer V'Seifreha, rather let every nation and its scribes, meaning it's wise men, come one at a time. As the Pasuk says, l'umim will gather. So in other words, first it's nikbetzu yachta. First it's like all of them are coming as one undifferentiated mass. But then Hashem is saying, no, v'yeosfu, I want you to gather in an orderly fashion, each nation by itself. Therefore it doesn't say yachta over there. What does the word la'umim mean? Ve'in la'oim ela malchus. The word la'oim means an independent kingdom. Shenema la'oim mil oim yemot, as we find that Rivka was told that one nation will overpower the other, the children of Esav, Edom, and the children of Yaakov, the Jewish people, that each one will have a period of domination over the other. So therefore Hashem is saying, ve'os la'umim, every nation, gather by yourselves. So the Gemara asks, first of all, you're telling me everybody came in a confused mass. What does he mean? Is there b'chalal such a thing as confusion before Hashem? Hashem sees everybody. Hashem sees and observes everybody with one glance. So you could say for us, you see a bunch of goyim and it's hard to pick out who's who. Hashem can anyway pick out who's from which nation. Why does he need them to come in an orderly fashion? No, the reason is not for Hashem. It's for they themselves. That they shouldn't be mixed up with one another. That Hashem wants them, each one, to hear clearly what he has to tell them. Because, in other words, like this, If there's a mixed up confusion between them, they themselves are going to get confused, Rashi says, and they're not going to be able to make their valid claims, and Hashem wants to give them a fair hearing. You want to make your claims for reward, then I want to hear what you have to say, and I want to make sure that the judgment is completely fair, and you shouldn't be able to say afterwards that our arguments weren't properly heard. So for that, you need to be separated by nations so that you can be clear on what your arguments are. But for Hashem himself, it's not necessary because Hashem would be able to pick out who's who in the crowd anyhow. Okay? So the Gemara says, Miyad nichnas alafan of Malchus Roy Mitzchila. The first one that comes in is the kingdom of Rome. Nowadays Rome is long gone as an empire, but there's still outgrowths of them. Ade Yemazeh, you have a number of nations, the United States among others, that have their culture and their civilization very strongly influenced by the Romans. You look at, for example, in America, look at how many of the public buildings are based on Roman models. The system of government is to a certain extent based on the Romans. The concept of a Senate, for example, e pluribus unum, and other American mottos are in Latin and so forth. So the Romans still have a very powerful influence in the world. And then, of course, there's the religion that they took on, Christianity, which is also still a very powerful force in the world. So, Bepashtus, when the Gemara says the Romans come, we mean the heirs of the Romans nowadays. Anyway, so the Gemara interjects, my timer, why first the Romans? And the reason is Mishum Dechashiva, because the Romans are the most important. Their empire is the most important out of all the ones in the world. Umanolam Dechashiva. Well, how do we know it's so important? So Dichtiv, you have in Daniel. Daniel has a vision where he sees four gigantic beasts, that four gigantic animals that represent the different world powers from Churban Bayis Rishon until Mashiach comes. He sees first a creature that represents Babel, another is a creature like a lion with eagle's wings. Then he sees a bear-like creature that represents the Persians. Then he sees a leopard representing the Greeks. And then the last one, he sees an animal that represents the Romans. The pasuk doesn't even identify, and Daniel doesn't even identify the animal. He just calls it, it's terrible, and it's fearsome, and so forth. There's a medrash actually that identifies it with a wild pig. We find in various places where the pig is a symbol of the Romans. The Romans themselves actually had noble families that had the name Porky or whatever, which means the pig. So they considered it to be an important thing, and they used it as a symbol of theirs. So now in Torah literature, also Lahavdil, it's used as a symbol for them sometimes. Anyway, so Dichtiv, the pasuk describes about that creature that represents the Romans, the Seichel Kol Ara, it will consume the whole earth, or Sedushina, and it will trample it, the Sadkina, and it will grind it up. You know, the Romans had a tremendous effect on the world. Every place they conquered, they really made over and remade into a place of their culture and into a symbol of their culture. Rabbi Yechanan says, "Zu Romi Chayeves." This refers to wicked Rome. Shetiva Yotza B'chala Olam, that Tiva has gone throughout the whole world. Tiva can mean it's fame. So Rashi explains, Tiva means it's fame. Everybody in the world, even people far outside the Roman Empire, knew of it. You find actually there are historical records from the time of the Roman Empire where it turns out that even the Chinese, very very thousands of miles away from any end of the Roman Empire, they knew of the Roman Empire and of its great power. So it's famous, spread throughout the world. Another meaning of Tiva can also mean it's coinage. Their coinage was accepted throughout the world, even in places far outside of its orbit. Why are we calling it Rumi Chayeves? Tosfos points out the word Chayeves means guilty, means wicked. And you have psukim that refer to Edom, as wicked. And in fact, all over Shas we have that Rome is identified with Edom. Whether it means they're actually biologically descended from Edom, or whether or not, is a discussion among Rishonim, which actually has implications in Halacha as well. Anyway, Tosfos brings from a medrash of Rav Chanina ben Tzadion that the Romans deserve Churban Gadol. Hashem has decided on them a great Churban because of what they did to the Jewish people. So therefore, they're called Romi Chayeves, wicked Rome, because of where they killed the Asar Arog and Malchus, and Rav Chanan ben Tradi, and especially later on in the Masechta, it tells the story how he was burnt, wrapped up in a Sefer Torah, so they deserve that epithet of Hayeves, of the guilty wicked ones. Anyway, by the way, this point that the Romans' fame and economic effect is spread throughout the world. There's actually Ben Yehoyada comments on it that it means that we don't just mean in the sense that they conquered and took over places in the world. We actually mean economically as well. They would buy from the entire world, and therefore literally their coinage spreads throughout the world. And the Seichel Kolaro, they literally eat from the whole world. Because they're supplied by food from the entire world. Even more so nowadays with globalization, you have very much like that, where a single powerful country like the United States is really eating from and consuming things from all over the world, and its coinage and its currency circulates throughout the whole world. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Manolam dechoshiv ayobadesha." Fine. So we've established that the Romans are the most important of the powers in the world. The Romans or their heirs in later generations. So now, how do we know the most important one should go and be judged first? On the face of it, you would say it's a very obvious thing, but nevertheless, the Gemara still wants to find a source for that concept. In other words, one explanation from Tosfos Chachmei Anglia is it's one thing, for example, the most important should come in first for reward, but since Hashem is going to be punishing them, why should the most important come in first? So the answer is, it's like what Rav Chista says, Melech v'tzibur, when you have the king and the tzibur are going to be judged, Melech nichnas tchilo l'din. The king is the first one to go in to be judged. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Lasis Mishpat Avdoi or Mishpat Ama Yisrael, the Gomer, that Shloimeh asks that Hashem should do the judgment of his servant, meaning myself, King Shloimeh, and of his people Yisrael. So we see that the king goes before the people when it comes to judgment. And yes, that means even when it comes to punishment. There is, by the way, I mean, we said before that Hashem observes everybody with a single glance, so why do we need the kings to go first anyway? So the Chidah brings over here that the king is judged separately, because when it comes to the Gzar Din, everybody is going to be punished, everybody is going to be convicted and punished individually, and therefore the king has to go first. Anyway, so what's the underlying reason? Fine, we have Shloimeh's pasuk, but where does Shloimeh himself get that point from? So the Gemara says, you both say, Malav Orach Adol Mesa Malka Avroi. One reason is because not Derech Eretz for the king to be waiting outside while everybody else is being judged first. The other possibility, Mikame de Lepo Sharainaf, Hashem wants to judge the king before his anger is really, before his anger is really kindled. When you have the tzibur is going to be judged, and they've obviously done many, many things wrong, then Hashem's anger is going to flare. So now, so to speak, you have if the king were to be judged first, then Hashem would be extra angry at him, and he would deserve extra punishment because he was supposed to tell the people to do the right thing. So now, first Hashem judges the king, and then Hashem first judges the king before Hashem's anger flares so much. Now, to be sure, Marshall points out, you know, it's not like when we're talking about the Romans over here, they are in fact a whole nation, so they are a tzibur. Nevertheless, the point is that Hashem sort of has rachmanus on them, that he wants to judge them first before everybody else, before his anger is really kindled by seeing what everybody else did. So it's still, in other words, the same kind of thing. We apply it not only to the individual king, we apply it as well to the nation, that's the leading nation. Anyway, Omer Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem now turns to the Romans and says, you're coming for a reward because I announced anybody who was Oisek Vatorda deserves a reward. But Maya Saktem, what did you occupy yourselves with that you're claiming a reward? Oyinu Mefonav, so the Romans say, Ribono Shel Olam, Harishvokim Tikninu, we set up many marketplaces, or tikanu really would be the word, whatever. We set up many marketplaces. Harbe mechatzoyis asinu. We made many bathhouses. Harbe kesef v'zahav hirbunu. We amassed tremendous amounts of silver and gold. V'cholam lo yasinu ela b'shvi Yisrael kedei she'yiseaku b'Torah. We did it all for the sake of the Jewish people so that they should be able to occupy themselves with Torah. We have marketplaces, for example, that way they can make a living. And we have bathhouses so that they could clean themselves and be able to study Torah more peacefully. And the gold and silver. Now, how do they even have the chutzpah to say such a thing? I mean, it's fairly obvious that they weren't doing it at the time. So there's a couple of explanations. One explanation is that they're saying that. There's an interesting explanation brought from the Brisker Rav, Revelvel, brings in turn from his father, Reb Chaim Brisker, that says that the Rambam brings an example. Let's say you might have a person build a tremendous, gigantic palace mansion. And the whole purpose of it is one day, years later, a tzaddik is going to be walking by, and it's going to be hot, and he'll sit in the shadow of the building for a while. So therefore, Hashem allows that this other person many years earlier became rich and built this whole palace just for that purpose. So the same way over here, the Goyim, the Romans, are saying that the same kind of thing. Yeah, of course, we didn't consciously intend at the time, but the fact is, everything you created, everything in the world for your purposes, Hashem, therefore, everything that we did does turn out to be Bishvil Yisrael for the sake of the Jewish people to be able to enhance their learning Torah, and therefore we indirectly deserve a reward for it. Rav Velvel mentions in this connection, actually he mentions something that happened closer to our times. The Romans during the war against Japan in 1904, 1905, they built a railroad across Siberia, the Trans-Siberian Railway. So their purpose was, they figured, because they need more easily to be able to get soldiers and war material and whatever over to the front. Really, it turned out 30 odd years later, that was the means by which many yeshiva life, the Mir yeshiva, the Tzmimim, the people from various other yeshivas were able to escape during at the beginning of World War II, and you have the famous Sugi Hara, the famous Oyev Yisrael, the famous Chosid Umas Olam, the Japanese consul who issued thousands of visas, and that way people were able to travel across Russia and end up in Japan, and then afterwards in Shanghai. All of that, what enabled them to get across there was that railroad that here the Russians had built 40 years earlier, thinking they were doing it for purposes of their war, and really it turns out in retrospect that it was done, that it was Min HaShemayim, in order that those yeshiva lights should be able to get away. So we have an example of that. So now the Romans are making the same claim that everything we did, since it did end up enhancing and making it possible for the Jews to learn Torah, then therefore they deserve a reward for that. There's different other explanations that they're saying that along similar lines. Fine, we're not saying we did it purely l'shem shemayim, but the fact is the Jewish people did benefit from it. So we deserve some kind of reward for that. Ben Yehoyada adds in addition, you have, like we learned at the end of Makkos, that we had when Rabbi Akiva saw how rich and powerful and comfortable the Romans were, and he says, Im l'ovre tzone kach, if Hashem does so much for those who violate his will, l'ovre tzone alachas kama wakama, how much more so will be the reward for those who do Hashem's will. So now, Ben Yehoyada explains the Romans are going to make the same kind of claim, where we can use Rabbi Akiva's logic, because we had such wealth and power and everything that gives more of an incentive for the Jews to learn Torah and makes more of an, and that the Jews should get more of a reward. So Amalai Makarish Baruch Hashem answers them, Shotim Shaba Olam, you world class fools. Now, if you notice, Hashem is not calling them liars, because the fact is, based on what we just said, there is a certain validity to what they're arguing, but Hashem is saying, you're foolish that you didn't realize that at the time. Everything you did was for your own purposes. Tikantem shvokim, why'd you make the marketplaces? Not so much in order to enhance business and make it, as you said, possible for Jews to be able to learn Torah. But rather, in order to have Zoinus be able to sit over there. So in other words, it's not just that you can say that, Hashem is saying, now, you could have just said that, listen, you want to do business with them, but fine, Hashem is saying, even more so, you're claiming that at least that business benefits the Jews, but look at that, what you were using these marketplaces for Zoinus, is not even something that benefits the Jews, it's rather something shameful and derogatory, and you certainly don't deserve a reward for that. as far as mechatzos, the bathhouses you made, la'adim behematzmachem, was in order to enjoy yourselves over there. Kesef v'zahav, you're saying you amassed lots of silver and gold. Shalihu, well, all that silver and gold is mine. What are you taking credit for that you amassed any of it? I was the one who made it possible for you to gather that in the first place. In fact, Marsha points out, after all, you know, a lot of the silver and the gold they got was from Hashem's originally. It was from the Beis Mikdash. So all the more so then Hashem is saying that this gold, it's not just everything in the world belongs to me. This gold and silver you actually stole from us. You actually stole from me from the Beis Mikdash. The Raivad actually makes a different, interesting point on it. He says, you know, listen, Hashem, why did I give you so much wealth so that you don't go and plunder the Jews for all of their wealth? At least like this, you figure you have a lot of gold and silver, and therefore at least you're willing sometimes to give the Jewish people a break on taxes and confiscations and whatever. You certainly don't deserve a reward for that. Anyway, Hashem says, as the pasuk says, Liya kesef liya zav, no Hashem tzvakas. The silver is mine, the gold is mine, says Hashem tzvakas, so you deserve no credit for it. So, therefore, Hashem is saying, so that argument of yours doesn't mean that you're deserving a reward. So now, Hashem continues, before we started the sugya by quoting a pasuk from Yeshaya, where we said, Kol ha-goyim nikbetzu yachtav v'yosfu l'umim, which meant that the goyim assemble together, and then Hashem tells them to gather as individual nations. The next words in the pasuk, mi vahem yagiv zois, who is there among them who will say this? So now Hashem says, well, I've dismissed your argument. So now the real question is, mi vachem yagid zois? Who is them among you, or vachem actually is how it says in the pasuk, whatever, who among you is going to say zois? So what do we mean zois? Ve'in zois kala Torah. The word zois refers to the Torah. Shenema ve'zois ha-Torah asher samarsha. So is there any among you who actually was involved in Torah? Not just, in other words, that a benefit to Torah would be a side benefit of what you did, like you're arguing, but rather that you actually did it specifically for the sake of the Torah. Who among you is there that actually was involved with Torah and actually was doing it in order to honor the Torah and now the goyim are not allowed to learn Torah to be true, to be sure, but there is a limited amount of it that they can learn. But in other words, the point is that Ion Yaakov explains the question is, Hashem is saying, listen, if you claim the Torah was so precious to you, how come you never learned it all this time? And the question would really be why you didn't accept the Torah in the first place. But at least, at the very least, Hashem is saying, at least if you had that motivation in mind at the time, you're doing these things in order to benefit Zeus, to benefit Torah, then fine, you deserve a reward for that. But you didn't, so you don't. Okay, so miyad yosef apache nefesh, so the Romans leave disappointed. They're not getting a reward from Hashem for everything that they did to advance civilization. Okay. Next, Yotzes Malchus Roimi, the Roman Empire leaves. V'nichnas Malchus Paras Acharei, the next one comes in as the Persian Empire. Nowadays we have the actual heir of Persia is Iran, which the Eidishah should help soon that we have a complete victory over them, but it's certainly not a world power. So here we would have to say, again, it represents, the Iranians are Muslims, and they have, you know, their country became afterwards a center, has become one of the world centers of that religion. So it would represent, therefore, again, if we're saying that the Persians, that we're saying that the Romans represent the Christians, and they're the Persians in this context would represent the Muslims. So they're the next ones to come forth for judgment. And the Gemara says, my timer, why are they next? And the reason is, Docha Sheva Basra, because they're the next most important. Ne'umunolon, and how do we know? Dichtiv, because again, in Daniel's vision, Va'aru Cheva Ochi Sinyona Domuladoiv, he says, after the kingdom of Babel, he says, the next one I saw was another creature resembling a bear. The Tony of Yosef, Edo Parsi, and Rabbi Yosef teaches that bear-like creature refers to the Persians, Sha'uchlan v'shoisin kadoiv, they eat and drink voraciously, like a bear, and with Sobolan Boso kadoiv, they're covered with flesh and they're fat or muscular or whatever, like a bear, or Megadlan Seir kadoiv, they grow their hair long like a bear, the Inlam Menucha kadoiv, and they're restless like a bear. So therefore, so bear is the symbol of the Persians. And we find in various places in Shas where the Gemara compares the Persians to bears for the, for all these reasons. So now, so again, in context of Daniel's vision, it sounds like he's talking about the historical empire of Paras and Madai that took over for, that took over after Babel, that defeated Babel and became the new world power. But again, there's there, we're talking about that in later times, there's outgrowths of that down to nowadays you have the Islamic world. Okay. So Hashem now turns to the Persians or their followers and says, so what were you involved with that you that you're claiming the reward? So they make a similar argument to the Romans. And the Gemara is going to ask if they already realize that the Romans lost with such an argument. Why are they even bothering with a similar argument? So we'll get to that soon. But first, they say, Ribbono Shelam, habig shorim gashanu, we made many bridges, we made many bridges, the Persians were famous for their efforts in building bridges, habig krachim kavashnu, we conquered many fortified cities, habig mochomos hasinu, we made many wars, v'cholam, so these were all things that the Persians of the times of the Gemara were involved in, and to some extent, those are things that, that ever since then the Muslims have been doing, v'cholam layasinu, el v'shri yisrael, kadesh yisask about Torah, we were all doing it for the sake of the Jewish people, so they should be able to be involved with Torah. The bridges, the bridges help them that now they can travel from one place to another to learn Torah. The capturing the cities and doing lots of wars, now people are able to go and then and learn Torah in peace in those places. So they're arguing that all of these things benefited the learning of Torah. Hashem tells them similarly to the Romans, everything that you did was for your own sakes. The real reason you made the bridges was in order to was in order to collect tolls on them. Krakim, you conquered fortified cities, Lasis Behen and Garia, so you can have the people in them do work on behalf of the government. And Garia is forced labor on behalf of the government. So Rashi points out, and Garia can also mean, it can mean forced labor, it can also mean to requisition their animals or whatever for government purposes. You find many places in Shas where you would have, a person might have, that the government is sort of like nowadays you have an eminent domain, so you'd have a similar kind of thing in those days where the government could say that we need everybody's animals or everybody's whatever for the war effort, and therefore people are forced to give up their animals. That's all included in Angaria. So you're doing that. And by the way, that Ivan points out, they can't even say, well, listen, at least we exempted the Jews from the tolls in the Angaria. You didn't. You charged those tolls in the Angaria to the Jews also. So you can't say you're doing it for their sake. Milchomis, as far as the wars, that you're saying that you did them in order to benefit the Jewish people. And the RCC, I'm the one who makes the wars. I'm the one who made you successful in your wars. So therefore, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, that Hashem ish milchama, Hashem is the master of war. So again, Hashem asks, Klum yesh b'chem magid zois, is there any among you who said zois, who are actually doing it for the sake, who have been doing all along throughout all these centuries, have been doing it for the sake of the Jewish people and actually learning Torah yourselves to the extent that you're supposed to? Shenema v'zois, and in zois ala Torah, Shenema v'zois ala Torah, Asher sam Moshe. They don't have an answer to that. Miyad yotzim elafon of a pachin nefesh, so the Persians also leave disappointed. So the Gemara says, "Chima achad dechozis malchus paras malchus roimi to the mahani of lemidi." The Persians already see that the Romans did not get away with this argument. My time, Ayla, why do they even bother coming in and making the same argument again? The answer is Amri, because they can say to themselves, "Inu sasri beis mikdash." The Romans destroyed the beis mikdash. Va'anan boninan, we built the beis mikdash. So therefore, we can say therefore that we have more of a basis to argue that what we did was on behalf of the Jewish people. Mela, in other words, you could say the Romans, how could they claim such a thing when they actually destroyed the beis mikdash? But we, who actually built the Bis Mikdash back in the day, that shows, in other words, we have Jewish interests in mind to a certain extent, so therefore maybe we should be judged on the basis of that. By the way, Tosfos points out the Romans also built lots of bridges, but apparently the Persians built nicer bridges. Now, Tosfos also points out, so why are they even answering because we built bridges and conquered cities and so forth? They should have a very winning argument in that case. What do you mean, why do we deserve reward? Because we built the Beis Mikdash. And the answer is, Tosfos says, so the judgment is not what you do at one point in history. The answer, the question is, throughout time when your empire or your religion or whatever was holding power, what did you accomplish over all that period? Don't tell me one-time thing that you did. I want to hear what you were doing on an ongoing basis. So they can't answer with the Bais HaMikdash, but they can say, since back at the beginning, when we first became a world power, we built the Bais HaMikdash, therefore, maybe Hashem will judge us favorably when we say that later on, our bridges and our conquering cities and so forth were also, but this is what we're all Bishvil Yisrael, and Hashem will tell them, no, I'm not accepting that argument. It is true, again, it is true that I call Bishvil Yisrael, but you're fools for not realizing that at the time. Well, the Gemara continues, v'chein l'chol umma v'umma. This goes through every nation like that. Each one comes in with its arguments, and Hashem shoots them all down. And I ask, why do they even bother? If they see that these kinds of arguments didn't hold any water with Hashem, what's the point of doing it again? My time, why do they even bother coming in with the same kind of answers? And then with the same kind of arguments. And the answer is sadly, because they figure to themselves, fine, the Persians and the Romans and the Persians, the Persians at least maybe were a little bit better, but they both did subjugate and oppress the Jewish people. We didn't oppress the Jewish people. So they would say, at least if nothing else, we deserve a reward for that we had Jews among us, and we didn't harass them and cause them trouble or so forth. Or at the very least, you can say the fact that we weren't anti-Semites shows that whatever we did was for the sake of the Jewish people. But nevertheless, Hashem says, no, that's not an acceptable argument. You have to have actually been doing it for the sake of Torah, for the sake of the Jewish people, and not just for whatever government purposes that you had at the time. And therefore, I can't accept that you did it Bishvil Yisrael, even though, again, it is perfectly true that in the end, the Pnimisi in Yonim it is, but that's not a valid argument for you to advance. Okay, so Gemara asks, Maishna Hani de Hashivi, or Maishna Hanach de Hashivi Lahu. Now, why is it then in this description that we just said, we're mentioning specifically the Persians, the Romans and the Persians, and mentioning them individually? What about the other ones? What about, for example, we said that Daniel had seen a vision of four great powers, Babel and Yavon being the other two, so why aren't they listed separately? Why not, in other words, why does he just say the Romans come and then they're dismissed, and the Persians come and then they're dismissed, and he just says v'chein l'chol umma v'umma without specifically mentioning any others? Why not? Those were also great world powers. And the answer is, Mishum Dahanach Mashchi B'Mahusayu Ad Osi Mishicha. The two that we're mentioning over here, the Romans and the Persians, or their successors in later times, those are going to continue in their kingship, in their power, until Mashiach comes. The other one, Babel, for example, it was a great world power at one time, but nowadays there's not necessarily a successor of it. And the same thing with the Greeks. But the Romans and the Persians, even though they themselves, the original Roman Empire was long gone, the original Persian Empire was long gone, but the outgrowths of them, the religions that come from them and the cultures that come from them, etc., continue and are going to continue until Moshiach comes. Tosfos points out, actually, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that we learned in Sanhedrin that the Romans are going to conquer the Persians shortly before Mashiach comes, and then the Romans are going to have sole power for 9 months. But fine, what we mean is, and it was only literally until the day Mashiach comes, but until shortly before it. Fine. So now the goyim come up with a new argument. Ribbono shel Olam, klum nasata lanu v'lo kibalnu, did you offer us the Torah and we didn't accept it? You never offered us the Torah, so what do you want from us? How could they say that? We know Hashem offered them the Torah. V'haksiv v'yoymar, Moshe says in his brachas to the Jewish people, in v'zayis ha-bracha, Hashem mi Sinai ba, Hashem came from Sinai, V'zorach miseir loma, and he shone forth to them from Seir, and another passage says, Avikami Taimon Yavoi, Hashem comes from Taimon, which is a southern country, the land where the Yishmaelim live. So Rashi defines it Paran as Eretz Yishmael. So the question is, so Taimon is a synonym for Paran, and Paran is where Yishmael originally lived, as we find in Parshas Vayera. My boy the Seir, my boy the Paran, what is Hashem doing in Seir or in Paran at the time of the giving of the Torah? So that's the answer. Hashem offered the Torah, Hashem circulated around the Torah to every nation and every people, and he asked them, he asked them, the Rambam learns that it means that Hashem sent them a Novi to ask them if they want it. Whatever the case, the point is that Hashem asked them, do you want to accept the Torah? V'lo kibluah. None of them are willing to accept it. We know the famous Medrash that Bnei Esav said, since it says, Lo-Sirtzach, we can't accept it. And Bnei Yishmael said, Lo-Sinach. And the various other nations turned it down, each because they said, there's something in it we can't accept. Ad Shaboy, so Yisrov, kibluah. And then Hashem came to the Jewish people. And offered it to us, and we accepted it. So what do you mean? You didn't offer us the Torah. The Hashem did offer them the Torah. Ela hochi amri. Rather, you're right. Their question is, klum kibalnua v'lo kiyamnua. Did we accept the Torah in the first place that we should have to fulfill it? You're asking, why didn't we fulfill the Torah? Mivahem yagid zois. The fact is, we didn't accept the Torah at the time. How can you hold us responsible for not fulfilling it? So the Gemara says, well, isn't that the very refutation of them? That itself would be the kitrug against them. Why you didn't accept? You're going to say because we didn't accept the Torah. That itself makes you guilty. Well, why didn't you accept the Torah? That's the point. Amai lo kibaltua. The very question could be, why didn't you accept it at the time? And the answer is elakach omer lefanav. Rather, the goyim make an argument. Rebbeinu Shlom, klum kafisu aleinu how to gigas v'leiki balnua k'marsha asisa l'Israel. Did you overturn the mountain above us like a barrel, like the way you did to the Jewish people, and we still didn't accept it? You so to speak, forced the Jewish people into accepting the Torah. You never forced us. You asked us, do you want it? And when we said we don't want it, you said, fine, have a nice day. But you didn't force us into it. Hashem said to the Jewish people, if you accept the Torah, good, and if not, then you're going to be buried over there under the mountain. So the Goyim can make an argument, therefore, so you never forced us to receive the Torah. If you had, then it would be different. But now that you didn't force us, so we figured it's not that important. We didn't know to accept it, then how are you holding us responsible over here? Marashar points out later in the Sugya, the Gemara, then we'll learn tomorrow about Hashem, that Hashem is saying he's going to return the whole world to Torah Havayu if the Jewish people don't accept the Torah. So it amounts to the same thing, Marashar says. In other words, that the world itself, the world as a whole, would be returned to Torah Havayu, and therefore the Jewish people would be buried over there as well. So the Goyim have an argument that you didn't force us into that. And therefore, how can you hold us responsible for not accepting it? So the Gemara says, Miyad Omer Lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem says, very well, let's continue with the line from the Pasuk from Yeshaya. Horishonis Yashmiunu, tell us what was first. So in context of the Pasuk, it means like, tell us in advance what's going to happen. You goyish of prophets and whatever can't do that, unlike the true Nevi'im. But in the context of the Gemara over here, it means Hashem is telling them, let's hear from the first ones, the earlier ones. Shenema, but Yishon is Yashmiyunu. Sheva mitzvah shikibaltem. What about the Sheva mitzvah b'nei noyach that you did accept? Heichan kiyamtem. Where did you fulfill them? Let's see if you were actually at least keeping those. If you did, then you have a basis for saying that you would have accepted the Torah, as a whole, if kofa alem ha'kigigis. So did you keep the Sheva mitzvah b'nei noyach? Hashem is saying, therefore, you wouldn't have accepted the Torah either, and therefore you're not deserving of any kind of reward. So the Gemara says, how do we know the Goyim didn't keep the Sheva Mitzvahs? Now you could say, well, look around, you can see for yourself they don't, but nevertheless the Gemara wants a source for it in the Pasuk. Mind you, by the way, there is actually the Meiri talks about, I forgot to mention earlier when we were discussing the reasons why the dinim of our Mishnah about not doing business with the Goyim before the Chagas don't necessarily apply nowadays. The Meiri says that Bechlal, the Goyim among whom most Jews live, the Christians and the Muslims, basically keep Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noyach and are moral people. There's a big machlokas whether the Christians are considered Ovid Avodah Zarah or not, because seeing as how they worship Hashem together with other powers, the Meiri, among other Rishonim, holds that's not a problem for them, and therefore we can consider that they're keeping Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noyach. In any case, so here the Gemara is saying, so how do we know that they didn't? Meaning, in other words, at least in earlier times, or even if they are, they're not really keeping it in the right way. So the Tani Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef taught a braisa. The pasuk is Omar by murdered Eretz, Ra va Yakir Goyim. Hashem stood up and measured the earth. He saw and unloosed the goyim. So my raw, what does that mean? Hashem saw raw shev mitzvah shekibalim b'nei neich v'lekimum. Hashem saw that the goyim had been given the shev mitzvah, they accepted the shev mitzvah b'nei neich, but they didn't keep them given shekibalim because they didn't keep them omer b'tir on my hand. Then Hashem vayakir goyim. Hashem was matir them and said they no longer have to keep them. So now, in other words, so Hashem can say, nevertheless, before I was master them to you, then Harishonus, what was earlier, why weren't you keeping them before I was master them? Unless, what do you mean master them? It's good, then it comes out they gain from it. They didn't do it, and therefore now they're free from those obligations. Doesn't that come out then, that you have now a sinner has gained, they didn't keep these mitzvahs, and therefore they gain that now they don't have to keep them anymore. So the answer is, Oma Mabre de Ravina. No, what it means is on the contrary. They're still higher than them. Loima Afafishma Kaimin Oysan. Now that they're not, and now that Hashem loosed them, now that Hashem was released them from it, means even if they're Makayim them, Ein Makavon Alein Schar, they do not receive a Schar from Hashem for keeping those mitzvahs. Because now it's not Mitzvah Ba'oysa anymore. So they still have the Shev mitzvahs, but now they're not getting a reward for it like they would have before. So the Gemara is going to go on to continue and say that they are actually, they do get a schar, just not like mitzvah v'oisa. They're commanded, when a person is commanded to do a mitzvah, it connects them with Hashem, and therefore they get a much greater schar for it. But now, when a person is just doing a mitzvah voluntarily, then they don't. So here now we're saying, as a result of this raw vayakir goyim, that now they're not really strictly speaking commanded in the Shev Mitzvahs, and therefore now they don't get as much of a reward for them. Rashi elsewhere explains they're still punishable for not keeping them. They're just not getting as great a reward for fulfilling them. Okay, so the Gemara will go on then and continue with the discussion on that point, and then with the continuation of Hashem's judgment of the goyim.